You're listening to the Mens Rea podcast, and this is the story of Kitty Carroll. Thursday, the 20th of October, 1983, just before midnight, Gardaí were called to a sort of alleyway in Drogheda called Fairgreen. It was a sort of industrialised back lane just behind one of the main streets in Drogheda town and not far from the quays running alongside the River Boyne. In Fairgreen, Gardaí found the body of 64-year-old Catherine Carroll, known as Kitty to friends and family. Kitty had been attacked and lay dead. That evening, Mrs. Carroll had been at a whist card game with friends at King's Cafe, Lower Mell, helping to raise money for charity while socialising with friends. She had decided to make the walk to her home at 12 New Cottages, just off Drogheda's busy Georgia Street. This was about a 15-minute walk, and Kitty decided to take a route through Fairgreen as a sort of shortcut. It was a bit more of a direct route than sticking to the main roads of Trinity Street and Georgia Street. The area had a number of small alleyways that led from Fairgreen, which were dotted with small industrial units. From what Gardaí found that night in Fairgreen, it seemed that Kitty Carroll had been attacked, and then her body was dragged from the scene of the murder across Fairgreen to a secluded dead-end laneway where she was ultimately found. There were attempts made to revive Catherine Carroll at the nearby Our Lady of Lourdes Hospital by Dr. Geraldine Fleming, but these were unsuccessful, and Dr. Fleming pronounced the woman dead at around midnight. The area adjacent to where Kitty's body was found was sealed off by Gardaí, and forensic experts were called in to examine the scene. A post-mortem was to be performed on Mrs. Carroll's body by the state pathologist, Dr. John Harbison. Catherine Carroll was formally identified the day after her death by her cousin, Sheila Coyle. Kitty lived alone in her home in Drogheda. She and her husband Henry had just moved from Upper Mell to the newly built Old People's Dwellings in Georgia Street in Drogheda the year before, when Henry passed away at 64. The couple had had no kids of their own, though they were close with members of their extended families. Kitty was described as quiet, pleasant, and friendly. She was well-liked by her neighbours. She was a daily mass-goer and always attended 10 a.m. Mass in the Dominican church in the town. She enjoyed dressmaking as a pastime in her retirement, having been employed as a dressmaker most of her life. For many years, Kitty had had a dressmaking business of her own, which she ran from a premises in Dyer Street, Drogheda. Mrs. Carroll also enjoyed gardening and was a member of the local garden society. It was part of her weekly routine to socialise with friends on Thursday evenings at the whist drives, held in King's Cafe. The day after Catherine Carroll was found dead, the Evening Press newspaper reported that a young man from the Balls Grove area in Drogheda, a council estate on the far side of the River Boyne, was assisting Gardaí in their investigation of Catherine Carroll's killing. Gardaí believed that Kitty had been strangled and were working off the theory that she had died in the course of a robbery. It wasn't long before the papers reported that this young man, 22-year-old Michael Murphy, had been charged with the murder of Kitty Carroll. After much to-ing and fro-ing regarding the preparation and service of the book of evidence over the span of 6 months or so, a trial date was set very quickly. This was to be the first murder trial associated with Drogheda in over 5 years. On Thursday, the 12th of July, 1984, Michael Murphy's trial for murder opened in the Central Criminal Court before a jury of 8 men and 4 women and Mr. Justice Declan Costello. Murphy was at that time 22 years old and was described as a corporation employee, with the Drogheda Independent going on to say that he was a tall, well-built man with short-cropped hair. James Carroll, senior counsel, appeared on behalf of the state. In his opening statement, Mr. Carroll said that the court would hear that 2 hours after his arrest in relation to Catherine Carroll's death, the accused in the case had made a statement to Gardaí which contained certain admissions, and that Murphy had stated that he didn't know why he had killed Kitty Carroll. The prosecutor told the jury that though there was evidence that the accused had drink taken that night, it was the state's case that Murphy was in fact quite sober when the attack occurred. Catherine Carroll had been out that evening with her friend, Miss Elizabeth Mohan from Mell. Miss Mohan said that Kitty had looked fit and well that night and seemed to be in good form. On the stand, Mrs. Mohan said that Mrs. Carroll normally walked home with her and another woman after socialising on Thursday night in the King's Café. But on the night of her death, Kitty had left to make her walk home on her own. Dr. John Harbison, the state pathologist, examined Catherine Carroll's body and performed the post-mortem. He told the court that he found a bruise to the right side of Kitty's neck. There was vomit on her lips and face, blood on her right eyelid, and grazing and bruising to her right cheek. There were also hemorrhages present on her scalp and a bruise on the top of her skull. Mrs. Carroll's lungs had fluid on them, and the pathologist found that some of this fluid was actually stomach contents. In addition, Dr. Harbison noted areas of bleeding on the muscles of her tongue. Giving testimony, Dr. Harbison explained that he had concluded Catherine Carroll had died due to regurgitation and inhalation of her stomach contents. According to the state pathologist, there had been a forced induction of the gag reflex caused by the application of pressure to Mrs. Carroll's tongue. In the course of his post-mortem examination, Dr. Harbison had also found that there were, quote, coronary imperfections present in Kitty Carroll's heart, which he said may have played a subsidiary or contributory role in her death. He said he found no evidence of sexual assault. Kitty Carroll had died of a sort of drowning, the court was told. Dr. Harbison told Mr. Paddy McEntee, defending on cross, that a person who was not as weak as Kitty, or who did not suffer from heart disease as she did, might not have been killed by the same injuries. After hearing from the state pathologist, a number of witnesses brought the court through Michael Murphy's movements on the 21st of October the year before, where he had spent much of the afternoon and evening in various pubs in Drogheda. A barman at the Wagon Wheel pub said that Murphy had been in that afternoon and had been, quote, quiet and well-behaved. Larry Murphy, Michael's father, recalled that Michael had come home that day at around 5 p.m. and was in, quote, the best of humour. Michael had given his mother £25 from his wages and then left the house at 6 p.m. saying he was going off to Navan to play pool. Then Patrick MacIver, who owned Bridie's pub in Drogheda, gave evidence that he had seen Murphy in his bar with another man. The witness and this other man had indeed gone off to Navan to play some pool, but Mr. MacIver said that the accused had not gone with them. The three men had said their goodbyes and the witness saw Michael Murphy go off in the direction of Trinity Street. A barman from the Trinity Arms who was working that night, Kenneth McCabe, said that Murphy had been in his pub that night on his own. Murphy had drank several shorts, vodka and red lemonades, and according to the witness, he appeared to be in a good mood. The court also heard from Nolene Cochran, who had seen Michael Murphy drinking at the three-way bar. She described Murphy as being in a quote-unquote excitable condition. After Kitty Carroll had died, it was the state's case that Murphy had approached people who were in and around Fairgreen and told them that he had killed an old lady. The court then heard from these witnesses too. A corporation worker, Sean Dunnah, testified that he'd been sitting in a car with a girl parked at Fairgreen. The defendant, Michael Murphy, had approached his car and tapped on the window. According to Mr. Dunnah, Murphy had bluntly told them, "I killed a woman." The witness said he'd told Murphy to fuck off and that he'd had too much to drink and had then driven off, not taking what Murphy had said seriously. Then John Thornton appeared on the stand, the doorman from the Star and Crescent Club, located on Fairgreen. He had seen Murphy between 11:30 and 11:45 on the night of Kitty Carroll's death. Thornton's evidence was that Murphy had knocked at the door of the club and while Mr. Thornton was standing at the doorway, the accused had said to him, quote, Will you help me? I think I killed her. She is not breathing. The witness said he noticed that Murphy had, quote, a good few drinks on him, and Mr. Thornton admitted that he thought that the other man was messing. In response to Murphy's confession, the witness had told the accused to go home and get some sleep. After this, the court heard from Dan McKenna, who was a foreman with Drogheda Corporation and was actually Michael Murphy's boss. McKenna said he knew the accused as a friend and that Murphy had been working under him for 17 weeks by the time of Kitty Carroll's death. On the night of the 20th of October, 1983, Mr. McKenna had been in the Star and Crescent Club. After he left the club, he had gone out to his car, where the accused had knocked on the car window and asked to speak to him. According to Mr. McKenna, Michael Murphy had told him what he had done, and McKenna had responded by saying that Murphy was taking the mick, telling the other man, quote, don't be acting the fool. But Murphy proceeded to lead him around the back of a building and had shown him where Kitty Carroll's body lay. The witness had said that he knelt down and felt Catherine Carroll's body and told the court that he had found she was still warm. However, Mr. McKenna said he couldn't feel a pulse. He'd then told Murphy to stay where he was, and the witness ran off to alert Gardaí. Testimony was given by a number of the Gardaí who had attended the scene the night of Kitty Carroll's death, or who had dealt with Michael Murphy after he was brought to Drogheda Garda station. Garda Kevin Hill had arrived to the scene that night with two other Gardaí. They saw Mrs. Carroll lying on her back, with no shoes on her feet. Her clothing was disarranged and her undergarments were partially showing. Garda Hill said they had noted marks on Kitty's forehead and a trickle of what looked to be blood coming from her mouth. Sergeant Peter Gaffey told the court that he was another of the Gardaí who had arrived in Fairgreen that night on foot of a call to Gardaí. Sergeant Gaffey outlined that he and his colleagues had first attended to the woman who they saw lying prone on the ground. He had gone to Kitty Carroll's body, and Sergeant Gaffey recalled that he thought he had felt a slight pulse. His colleagues Garda Hill and Garda Dowley had attempted resuscitation until the ambulance arrived. According to Sergeant Gaffey, while all this was going on, Murphy had shouted, quote, she's dead, the old lady. I strangled her with my bare hands. I'll prove it. Her bag is over here. Murphy had led Sergeant Gaffey across Fairgreen and reached down in between two old junk cars, retrieving a handbag. According to the sergeant, Murphy had then asked him, quote, now do you believe me? There is her bag. Murphy had also shown Gardaí Catherine Carroll's shoes and her dentures, which also lay nearby. After bringing them to her bag, the accused had asked if Catherine Carroll really was dead, and Sergeant Gaffey testified he had responded that he was afraid she was. Gaffey had then arrested Murphy on suspicion of murder. At this point, the accused had, quote, got excited and told Sergeant Gaffey to take his hands off him. Sergeant Gaffey told the court that he could smell drink off Michael Murphy, but that the accused didn't seem drunk to the Gardaí and was, quote, perfectly able to walk. The sergeant also gave evidence regarding his interactions with the accused when they got back to the Garda station. By this point, Sergeant Gaffey said Murphy had calmed down and had become almost peaceful. Gaffey explained, quote, he seemed to have got relief from the fact he had confessed to the killing. The statement that the accused gave at the time was then read to the court, wherein Murphy took Gardaí through his movements that day. Murphy said he had gone to his job with the Drogheda Corporation at the Old Abbey that morning. At lunchtime, he'd collected his pay of £78 and left. From that point on, he went to five different pubs, excepting an hour when he went home for his dinner. All told, the court heard that he had drank about 7 pints and 11 shorts throughout the evening. Murphy told Gardaí he'd left the final pub, the three-way bar, at closing time and walked up McCluskey's Lane. Murphy had then gone on to describe how, while in the Fairgreen area, he had realised that a woman was walking close to him and that she was on her own. As this woman passed him by, Murphy admitted that he had reached out with his left hand and grabbed her by the throat. According to the statements, Michael Murphy had then described squeezing the woman's neck with both hands until Mrs. Carroll fell to the ground. The accused went on to say that Mrs. Carroll had shouted out for help, and so while he had her on the ground, he had pushed his thumbs into her mouth and pressed down on Mrs. Carroll's tongue. Because of this, Mrs. Carroll's dentures had been dislodged and fell from her mouth. Murphy had told Gardaí that he had heard a noise coming from Catherine Carroll's throat 3 or 4 times. When Catherine went still, he rifled through her handbag, took a purse with a pair of rosary beads and put it into his pocket, and then he dragged Catherine Carroll on her back by her feet to a more secluded spot near to the gateway of the Swan Inn. The statement also took in events after the attack that Murphy had described, detailing how the man had then gone to a number of men nearby to tell them what happened, and that Murphy had shown Gardaí Mrs. Carroll's body. He said that after doing this, he had walked away and said, "God forgive me." Murphy also stated that he thought Gardaí did not believe him when he told them what had happened. He'd said that after telling them that he'd killed the woman, one guard had responded, "No, you didn't." When Sergeant Gaffey left the stand, his colleague Garda Dowley took his place and recalled that at the scene on the night of Catherine Carroll's death, Murphy had approached the ambulance drivers as they were loading Mrs. Carroll's body into the back of the ambulance. The accused had blurted out, "I killed her, I killed her, is she dead?" He was again described as very excited at this time, and the guard said Murphy had to be pulled away from the ambulance. Garda Dowley went on to tell the court that he had searched the bag recovered from the scene, which Murphy had brought Gardaí to. Inside, he had found an electricity bill with Catherine's name on it, which was how they'd been able to provisionally identify the woman that night. Also in the handbag was a scarf and a door key, but there was no money or purse. Detective Sergeant Downey told the court that before he took a written statement from Murphy, the accused had said, quote, "I don't know why I did it. I must be mad. For God's sake, find out how the woman is in the hospital." Murphy had also commented to him that he, Murphy, was fed up with life. The trial continued the following day, Friday the 13th of July, when the court heard from Detective Garda Michael Callahan. Detective Callahan said that Murphy had described his attack on Kitty Carroll to him, telling him, quote, "I kept my hand down her throat. I heard a click. I thought she was choked, but she wasn't. She still struggled. I heard a second click, and I knew she was dead." Detective Garda John Biggins gave evidence that he had also responded to the scene that Thursday night and said that Michael Murphy had made a statement to him that he had killed a woman. Garda Biggins described how, when back at Drogheda Garda Station, a small purse had been located in Murphy's jacket pocket. The purse contained a set of rosary beads. When shown the item, Michael Murphy had told Gardaí that they must belong to the woman, Kitty Carroll. Just as Garda Gaffey had told the court the day before, Detective Garda Biggins testified that, though Murphy obviously had some drink taken, he did not appear drunk when the Gardaí arrived. Superintendent Michael McKeown also said Murphy had appeared sober when the superintendent had visited him in the interview room, though it was also clear that Murphy had at some point that evening been drinking. Superintendent McKeown said that at the time he saw him, Murphy was in good form and joking and laughing. Later on that Friday, Superintendent McKeown had charged Michael Murphy with Kitty Carroll's murder. By that afternoon, 25 witnesses for the prosecution had been called, and the state's case was complete. No evidence was called on by the defense team. In closing, James Carroll, appearing for the DPP, stated simply that the fact or extent of Murphy's intoxication that night, which Gardaí had testified seemed relatively low, was no excuse for his actions. Drunkenness was not a defense. Paddy McEntee, defending, told the jury that Michael Murphy had been very drunk at the time of the attack on Catherine Carroll. So drunk, in fact, that the accused had been incapable of forming the necessary intent to have committed murder. McEntee asserted that his client had been, quote, utterly irrational and not interpreting reality. Murphy's defense counsel acknowledged that everyone in the court who had heard the proceedings was rightly outraged by Catherine Carroll's killing in the declining years of her life. She was entitled to be alive today, but nothing could be done to bring her back, he said. However, McEntee put it to the jury that the state had provided no motive for Murphy's attack on the woman. Robbery wasn't the motive, as the accused had a good job. He said there was no sexual element to the case either. This was simply down to the defendant being too drunk to know what he was doing. Paddy McEntee went on to describe what his client had done as a, quote, astounding thing committed in a busy part of Drogheda. A crime committed without thought or reason and, quote, as near lunacy as you could get. McEntee told the jury that Murphy had been so intoxicated at the time of Kitty Carroll's death that he was unable to form the requisite mens rea and therefore had not committed murder. During his instructions to the jury, Mr. Justice Costello said that the issue of intoxication was important in this case. If the jury concluded that Murphy was so drunk he was incapable of knowing that what he was doing was dangerous, he had not formed intent, and they would therefore have to find him not guilty of murder. The verdicts of murder and of manslaughter were open to them. After 4.5 hours of deliberation, the jury returned. They had found Michael Murphy guilty of manslaughter. Mr. Justice Costello then put back sentencing to occur the following Monday, where the court heard character evidence before Murphy found out his fate. Michael Murphy's early life was outlined. He had started school at the age of 5, attending St. Mary's National School, but he was not progressing at the usual pace and was transferred to St. Eta's Special School 3 years later. He had a bad attendance record there. At 11, Michael Murphy was before the district court for the first time on a charge of larceny, and as a result, he was sent to St. Joseph's Industrial School in Clonmel. Murphy left there at 16. In 1980, Murphy was bound to the peace for assault causing bodily harm. In 1981, he was bound over for a breach of the peace, and in June of 1983, he was fined for dangerous driving, failing to remain at the scene of an accident, and driving without insurance. Father Farrelly, the Murphy's parish priest in Drogheda, told Justice Costello that the defendant came from a well-respected family. The priest had a high opinion of the Murphys and held them in high regard. They were decent people and were very upset and concerned about what had happened. The rest of the Murphys had chosen to stand by Michael and had visited him while he was in prison. Father Farrelly outlined that Michael Murphy had shown an aptitude for arts and crafts while in prison. The priest said he would not have expected the 22-year-old to commit such a crime, given his family background, and went on to say that Murphy's actions had been, quote, out of character. Paddy McEntee told the court that his client had changed jobs a lot, but that Murphy had a, quote, disposition for hard work. Before his arrest, Murphy had worked in the fishing industry, on trawlers. He'd worked with Irish Cement and as a porter for Dunn Stores, as well as on the docks in Drogheda, and he'd worked near Manchester and had lived in a Salvation Army hostel while there. When he'd returned from England, he'd gotten the job working for Drogheda Corporation as a labourer. Before the trial, Michael Murphy had been assessed by a psychiatrist who said that Murphy would benefit from mental health treatment. In addition, the court was told Murphy had made two, quote-unquote, minor suicide attempts in the years previous. McEntee concluded by telling the court, quote, he feels extremely ashamed over what he did. Justice Costello acknowledged the jury's decision, but also said that the amount of drink taken did not amount to a reason for leniency. In addition, the judge said he was entitled to accept Garda evidence that the accused did not appear intoxicated when they met Murphy after the crime was committed. Justice Costello said, quote, I do not accept the view it was a violent, unprovoked assault with no motive. I'm quite satisfied that he had a motive in assaulting her. He failed to state what his motive was in any of his statements to Garda. I am taking into account his lack of candour in this connection. At the end of the proceedings, Mr. Justice Costello handed down a sentence of 12 years and refused leave to appeal against the severity of the sentence. Murphy bowed his head as the sentence was passed, but showed no emotion. Michael Murphy served 9 years of this sentence and was released from prison at around 32 years of age in 1993. A few years later, in 1995, he was before the court in relation to a number of armed robberies in Drogheda, where he had gone into local businesses with a fake gun and demanded money. Murphy was convicted on charges of robbery and threats made with a firearm and was sent back to prison. After his release on those charges, Michael Murphy found himself back before the court quickly. In July of 1998, Judge Flann Brennan presided at Drogheda Circuit Court when 36-year-old Michael Murphy appeared in relation to an attack on two women. This was a summary trial. There would be no jury. Rather, Judge Brennan would come to the verdict on his own after hearing all the evidence. Murphy was represented by his solicitor, Paddy Goodwin. The alleged attack had occurred on November 22, 1997. Both of the women, who remained unnamed in the press, came to court to describe what they said had occurred as they walked together along Wellington Quay in Drogheda on that night in the November the year before. The first woman to take the stand described how her attacker had suddenly put his arm around her face and then dragged her to the ground. This man, she said, was tall with greyish hair and was wearing a blue-green jacket and black jeans. She recalled that her friend had managed to struggle and free herself and then shouted for her to run. The witness also managed to get off the ground and away from her attacker, and as the two women fled, the witness said that the man followed after them. But as they turned a corner, they saw the man run across the bridge over the River Boyne at Dominic Street. The second woman also told the court how, while she and her friend walked along the quay in the centre of Drogheda town, a man had thrown his arm around her neck. She said this man was mumbling something. Eventually, the woman managed to struggle free. The second witness testified that she'd gotten a good look at her attacker as he crossed the bridge at Dominic Street. She told the court that at the time, quote, he was walking backwards and shouting at us. Her evidence continued that the two women had then made their way back to their car and had begun to drive to a Garda station to report what had happened, when they came across a Garda van and had stopped to tell them about the attack. The women got into a Garda patrol car and drove to where they'd seen the man in order to point him out to the Gardaí. Eventually, after driving around Drogheda for a short time, they saw the man in the Ballsgrove area and alerted the officers in the front of the car. Garda Michael Dunn had been out working that night in Drogheda and gave evidence that he had arrested Michael Murphy under provisions of the Public Order Act. The Garda said, quote, he was out of breath and slouched down. He was staring blankly away and refused to give his name and then became aggressive. Murphy was taken to the Garda station where the two women identified him as their attacker. After this, Inspector Gerry O'Brien told the court that both women had described the attack on them to him as an attack on their person. One said she didn't believe that this was an attempted robbery because she wasn't even carrying a purse. She had been injured on her shoulder and she felt traumatized, saying she didn't feel safe while out walking. The other woman did have a handbag on her shoulder, but told Inspector O'Brien that the man had made no effort to grab it. Again, she told Gardaí that she was not physically injured, but reported that she had been, quote, very nervous ever since. Then a forensic scientist, Dr. Michael Norton, took to the witness stand and said he had examined a blue-green jacket belonging to Michael Murphy. Dr. Norton said that on the jacket he had found a stain which turned out to be makeup. This makeup, the expert said, matched the makeup that was worn by the women. He had also found fibres present which matched the women's clothes. Dr. Norton said that this wasn't conclusive evidence, but his findings indicated a high probability that the jacket had made contact with such makeup and supported the idea that the two women had therefore been in contact with the jacket. Then Detective Garda Michael Fleming read a statement made by the defendant, Michael Murphy, given while he was in custody in Drogheda Garda station. In this statement, Murphy said that he had been in the pub on the evening of the 22nd of November. He had planned to get a taxi home when he left that night, but he'd changed this plan when he saw the queue for cabs. Murphy said he'd decided to walk and so had made his way along Wellington Quay. Murphy then went on to describe how, after coming across two women, he had pushed or pulled them to the ground. They had screamed and he had left, heading across the bridge. Murphy stated he had had no intention of harming the women. However, the defendant then made his way to the witness box to give evidence and said that he had not made this statement, though he acknowledged that the signature at the bottom of the page was his. In court, Murphy claimed nothing had happened at all when he walked home that night, until Gardaí arrived. He insisted that not only had he not assaulted anyone, the story about pushing or pulling the women was also untrue. He'd never said it, and it didn't happen. When evidence concluded, Judge Brennan said that though he noted the forensic evidence was, quote, only circumstantial, the evidence against Murphy on the charges in its totality was overwhelming. Murphy had been identified by the women, both just after the event and then again in court. Further, the judge was satisfied that the Gardaí were being honest. Judge Brennan found Michael Murphy guilty of the assaults. Murphy's background and previous criminal history was then outlined in court, revealing at last that Murphy had previously been given a 12-year sentence for manslaughter. His defense lawyer, Mr. Goodwin, told Judge Brennan that Murphy had spent 14 of the last 18 years in jail, but now had an opportunity for employment and wanted to pay compensation to the women. Patty Goodwin asked for leniency and for no custodial sentence to be handed down in light of this. Judge Brennan remanded Murphy in custody, awaiting a sentencing hearing, and ordered the preparation of a probation report and a welfare report. He said these reports would have a bearing on his decision regarding the length of the sentence to be imposed. Murphy was definitely going back to jail. Then Judge Brennan spoke about the two women who had come to court to give evidence regarding what must have been a terribly traumatic experience for them. He praised them for giving evidence. The judge said, quote, "Thanks to their courage, this evil and devious man has been rightly convicted." The following Friday, the 17th of July, 1998, Murphy was sentenced for the assaults. Judge Brennan handed down two concurrent sentences of 6 months for common assault, the maximum sentence available to him. The judge said he had found nothing in the reports to mitigate the offences and noted a far more serious assault charge could have been brought. Of course, we know it would not be too long before Michael Murphy was before the court again. This wasn't even 3 years before Bettina Pushel disappeared while walking along the Drogheda to Dunure Road on her day trip out to Newgrange. Thank you for listening to Mens Rea, a true crime podcast. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram at Mens Rea Pod, or you can send an email to mensreapod@gmail.com. This podcast is made possible in part from generous donations by supporters on Patreon. Patrons get ad-free episodes, bonus episodes, nifty merch, and of course my unending thanks and undying love. Please do check it out at patreon.com/mensreapod. Our theme music is Quinn's Song, The Dance Begins by Kevin MacLeod. Additional music is by Juanita Meisel and Kevin MacLeod. This episode was researched and written by me, your host Sinead. All sources for today's episode can be found in the show notes or on our website, www.mensreapod.com. And so, till next time, don't do anything I wouldn't do.